In today's episode of the Love and Creative Podcast, I will be sharing with you an interview that I did on the Soul Stories Podcast. It was a three-way conversation with my friend Danny Mazur and my other friend Femi Nasi, who is a podcaster, a poetess, spoken word artist, and a content creator herself. So in this conversation, we talked a lot about immigration, about our different experiences as immigrants in the US, particularly how things have changed for both of us. Femi is from Benin. She moved to the US before I did, and we met here for the first time in a poetry event, but we had been talking on Twitter and Instagram. And in this conversation, what is interesting for me when I listened to it and when I edited, because I also produce a Soul Stories podcast, was how similar and especially different our stories were. Just moments earlier, I put up an Instagram post to paint that particular image and also to talk about how good Danny has become as someone who's able to keep a conversation on track and still allow us the freedom to explore different directions in whatever, you know, pops up in the conversation. Let's get straight into the episode of the Soul Stories podcast with Danny Mazur, where he interviewed Femi Nasi and myself a couple of weeks ago. Thank you very much for your time, and thanks for being on Love Creator Podcast.
Hey, I'm Danny Mazur, and welcome to the Soul Stories Podcast, an extension of Soul Stories, where we host conversations for healing and change. America is in the midst of a cultural reckoning, and in this season, I speak with leaders and creatives who provide a well-needed dose of inspiration. Our guests spend their time following their passion, uplifting others, and making a positive impact in what sometimes feels like a bleak reality. This season is about hope and the belief that change is possible. Enjoy. Olufemi Nasi is an author, poet, and host of the Inbetweeners podcast. Kamga Chasa is a poet, writer, and multi-format content creator. In this special three-way conversation, Femi and Kamga share the nuances, complexities, and challenges that come with immigrating to America. It's one of those conversations that will both open your eyes and expand your perspective. Honestly, I had a blast recording this with these two, and I think you will thoroughly enjoy it. Here is our episode. How are you guys doing today?
I am all right. It's 2020, and I think being alive is like the best place to be right now. So far, so good. I feel like I'm winning in a way.
Nice. Same. I'm living the dream, you know. I don't know whose dream it is, but it's real.
Will you both introduce yourselves?
My name is Olufemi Nasi, but I go by Femi. I'm from the Republic of Benin, which is a small country right next to Nigeria in West Africa. I am a writer, an author. I do spoken word poetry. I have a podcast, and I think that's it. I guess people will learn more as I talk.
I think I always have a hard time answering that question because I feel like Femi is the same. Like, what do I say? Who am I? But my perspective on that has been changing a lot with the content I've been consuming. And so my name is Kamga. It's the easiest name I have. I have four names. I was born in Cameroon. That's an English and French speaking country. We speak both English and French, not just French, just for the record. And also, besides Nigeria, it's just close to Nigeria as well. That's what we use. We always use Nigeria as a reference. I do a lot of things that all involve storytelling. So, for example, I edit the Soul Stories podcast, which you're listening to. I write on Medium. I do videos on YouTube, photography. I'll actually be shooting a wedding this Saturday. So I do a lot of things, and the thread is really just storytelling. And I guess I'm figuring out what I really want to do, and I may not. But ultimately, so far in 2020, I've had some moments where I've looked at the next, you know, decade, 5-10 years down the road, and I'm like, this is not where I should be if I want to be ahead of where I think I should be with the skills that I have. So it's been an interesting period of reflection, of thinking about the world and my role in it and how to get across to where I want to be.
Well, it's definitely a good time to reflect. There is a lot happening.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm curious. I've known you both for a minute now. Kamga maybe a little bit longer than Femi, but how did you two meet?
Instagram.
I think Instagram. Yeah.
It started on Medium, though. I knew you. You didn't know me. I was following you.
Okay.
I was following you Bifun. And Bifun. Yes. Yeah. And then I think... Oh, yeah, no, it was on Twitter that someone said, oh, you know, Kamga is in Denver, something, something, you should meet with Milan Flicka, something like that. And then later I saw you posted something about, where were you? Somewhere.
It was in Aurora, I think.
Aurora. Somewhere. And I was like, yo, hi, I'm Femi.
Maybe if I actually pull up our messages, I might find those messages from the beginning if I pulled them up.
I know,
here.
It must be there. I was like, yeah, I'm not a stalker, but I probably stalked you and found that you were here. So, hey, just wanted to say hi.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how it happened.
That is how it happened. And then the first time we actually met, there was an event. I think, I don't know if you invited me to this event or somebody.
Yeah.
It was a poetry event that Toluwanimi was organizing it?
Yes.
Yeah, my wife hated that event, by the way. Just side note. She was like, what are these people? Why are they so naked? But we went there, and then I'd not been to Denver, like the city. It was just, you know, Aurora is a little bit different from like downtown Denver. So it was my first time too. And I was like, I'm meeting somebody. And that was how we met. And it was awkward a little bit. And after a while, like, wait, this is like a writer friend. And then that was it. That was friends from a long time ago. And it was awkward for like 3 seconds. And after that,
just the first 3 seconds. And then it was good.
Yep. And ever since we've been talking, have we even collaborated? I mean, I've taken some pictures of you for an event. I worked on...
Yeah, for my poetry.
Some of your logo for If Talk.
Spoken word poetry.
A few things, but we've not yet done some real collaborative work. So let's look forward to that. But that's how we met, Danny. That's how we...
That's the long version.
And
Kamga, I know a little bit about your backstory. And also, if you're listening right now, Kamga does have a previous episode that you can check out to get his full story. Had you both recently moved here when you met, or how long have you been in America?
Yes, I had just moved almost a couple of weeks or maybe a month or so, I think. What about you, Femi?
I have been here, I think either the 17th or the 19th, I can't remember, it will be 5 years since I've been here.
Okay.
So it's been a while.
Yeah, I've been here for just 2 years. June 2020 will make it.
June 2020, we just passed that.
Yeah, we're past.
Oh yeah, so it's 2 years. Yeah. I work from home. I stay home all day. I forgot. I have no notion of time.
It's actually still March, Kamga.
Like, oh my god, if we were still in March, I couldn't. Nope. Hell no.
What brought you over, Femi?
My stepdad lives here. And I came to kind of just continue my studies. That was mainly the goal. After I had my high school diploma, I stayed in Benin for another year while waiting for the process to be over. Then I came here and started school. And then somewhere throughout that journey, I ended up starting writing. It was mainly for school.
And how old were you?
I was 19.
19.
Yes. Yes, I celebrated my 19th birthday here because it's in December. I'm like December baby, so.
Oh, nice. What was it like for you just to come to the United States? What was your experience?
Let's just say that experience was so strong that it led me to writing a book about the experience. So
you can hear about that in the book.
You can hear about it in the book. Support artists. But honestly, the first year was like for everyone else, like the hardest because it takes time to just adjust to the new realities. There were a lot of culture shocks. There was a great amount of loneliness and my first encounter with depression. So it was really, honestly, it's weird. It's like I'm thinking about it and it just feels blank. It feels like it was such a long time ago, but it was definitely hard. I remember that my first birthday here, my dad was at work. It's December 23rd, and I had spent the whole day at home alone. And that night he asked me, oh, well, you know, there's this event from my work. Do you want to go? At first, I didn't want to. I didn't care about it. But I was like, you know, I spent the whole day at home. Let's just go there. So I went there. And that was the first time I realized that I was Black, because I was literally the one Black person. And there were probably 50 plus people around me. My stepdad is white. So it was really...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and there was this lady who just came and she sat in front of me and she started staring at me just like that. And it was very uncomfortable. It was weird because I didn't know why she was staring at me. And in my head, it was like, okay, is it because I'm the only Black person here? Is it because I'm Black? Is it because I'm this? Is it because I'm that? So I really felt uncomfortable to the point where I had tears coming up. I had to tell my dad, hey, can you take me home? And I made up some weird excuse because I didn't want to have a conversation about
race,
whatever was going.
Right.
Yeah. And I got home and I just like, I cried the whole night and I was like, oh my God, here people are just going to see me as a Black person. It's crazy. All of that thing. So after that, like, it was really, you know, dark moments because I was alone. I'm an extrovert, but the school system vibe here is very different from back home. Like, typically back home, within the first day of school, I already know everybody. I'm very talkative. I go chat with everybody. But here, people were just in their own bubbles, on their phone, all of that. So it was really hard to get to know people. And so loneliness came, depression was the deal. And eventually, you know, you just push it through and you just take it one day at a time. You know, I remember the nights where I just looked at my wall and I was like, oh, you look so good. I could just run and knock my head right there, just fall asleep for the next decade. I didn't do that. It was just in my head. I did not. I have self-control. But yeah, it was hard, challenging. But all of that really led me to learning more about myself, about my culture, and just about life in general. So when I think about it, I'm still very grateful because he brought me to where I am. And if it wasn't for those experiences, I wouldn't have written the book. And that book is a great part of who I am today. And it was the foundation of all of the things I'm doing now.
Well, I want to dig more into that and kind of how you overcame. And thanks for sharing that experience. That sounds really intense. Kamga, can you relate to Femi's story in any way?
I don't know if I really can, because in a way I can see from her perspective how things were hard. But then when I picture it, you know, being here mostly by yourself, your step parent, not really understanding where you're coming from, an extrovert in a world that it's not exactly open to embracing who you are in that point. Like, it reminds me a lot of Queenie and how difficult it was for her in Cameroon to...
Who's Queenie?
Great. My wife. Yeah, I was listening. Queenie is my wife. And yeah, I think I thought the whole all the listeners were like my friends and private, you know, group. But
she also has an episode on the podcast.
Yes,
anyways,
she does.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No problem. So yeah, I can see how that is from her perspective. And it's not that I cannot relate to it. I'm actually actively trying not to say I can relate, because the more I think about experiences, individual journeys, whether it comes to race or relationships or even business building, I realize that, yeah, you can see some aspects in the story that are, you know, similar to yours, but ultimately every person's story is very different. And knowing Femi and, you know, reading her book and watching the story, I can see how hard it is and how equally hard it can be for me without being the same thing, because I moved here to meet my wife, Queenie. We're engaged. And I came with a different kind of baggage. So it wasn't, I had thought of going to school, but then I changed my mind. And I had no idea what America required in terms of like work and insurance and bills and taxes and just driving. So I didn't even know how to drive before I moved to this country. So the issues I faced in the span of 2 years, getting married, dealing with being married, moving to a different town, starting school and stopping school, getting a job, dealing with immigration papers, and all those things were so compressed that I feel like the past 2 years have been almost 10 years. So I'm thinking of it like such a long time ago. It's not, I'm actually, you know, I've written a lot about these things and I feel like I've lost even my writing ability. I mean, I said I was a creative and writer person, but very recently I realized that I can't even write anymore about these things because they're just fuzzy and the thoughts are weird and I can't think clearly because I'm dealing with other issues that just have nothing to do with immigration. I'm dealing with my relationship. I'm dealing with my health. I'm dealing with trying to build a business, trying to make money. So it's a bunch of things that are compressed in this short period of time where no matter what you do, you can't just sit and wait. Like, I mean, I just finished my job and we're doing this episode and tomorrow I have to wake up early and continue. You have 2 days off. So America is such a system that for most people who move here when they're older, it's a little bit harder to adjust than when you're a kid and you accommodate and get the accent and just move into the system. But it's been hard. It's been quite hard. And I can see how that could be the same for Femi.
And this is open to either of you, but both of you, what are the major differences? Because you brought up the pace, Kamga, and Femi, you brought up people being on their phones in a classroom, and I can 100% picture that scene. What were those differences like for you, and what were you used to previously?
So with the pace, for example, I'll take two things. I'll say driving and then work. Those two aspects. In Cameroon, you don't need to have a car because cabs take you everywhere. You can pay literally less than, I guess, less than a dollar for a round trip to the market or to anywhere you want to go to. So there's no Uber, there's no Lyft, there's just cabs everywhere. Yeah, of course, it's choked up and three people sit when there's supposed to be two and all that, but you literally don't need to have a car in Cameroon. You can live your life fully without ever owning a car. It's mostly for convenience and for those whose jobs actually require them to be at certain places at certain times. So that's the first part about the US, which is if you don't have a car in this country, you're fucked, basically.
Yeah. You don't have a life.
Yeah, you need to get to work. You need to get to anywhere. You can't even just walk to places because they're far away. Second thing is for work in Cameroon, people complain about unemployment. And even my parents, for example, did not want me to work while going to school. But here in the US, it's actually normal for you to get a job before you even go to college. It's normal for you to get your first job around, I don't know, 13, 14, doing something. It's like the aspect of working, the hourly pay, and the weekend is so built into the system that coming from a place in Cameroon where I had my first real job for like a few years before I moved here, and it wasn't that bad. It wasn't a thing I had to be at a particular place at a particular time. There were long hours and I sometimes felt exploited, but it wasn't the pressure of taxes, the pressure of if you don't have a job, you don't have insurance. Like those aspects of that are tied to working in the US were completely absent in Cameroon. Like if you don't have a job, well, you can always just go back home and hang out with your parents. But here, without a job, you're teetering towards death.
Yeah, we're super job-centric.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So regarding what I was saying, I think the main thing is that here, like the society is very individualistic compared to our communities that are more like community centered, you know, family oriented. And so here it's more about, you know, the self. It's more about your own accomplishment, your own life, your own this, your own that. And so coming from a place where people are used to actually coming together, not saying that's perfect or that it doesn't have its own negative side, but coming from that place where, just like what Kamga said, if you don't have your job, you can just hang out with your parents for a little while. Like, you know that you have kind of this support system to rely on in case something happened. But here it's like you're on your own, even when you have family, because everybody just pushes you to be independent, be your own person, be this, be that. And regarding the phone thing, for example, another aspect that was very interesting to me is that I will have the same classes with some people. We'll talk, we'll do group works, all of that. But then when we meet in the hallway, I typically smile and say hi, but they will do this weird, like 2 second smile, this weird facial thing that's like, I'm just like, God, I'm gonna bite you. I hate that. I swear. So whenever they do that, I'm like, oh, okay. Okay, y'all don't say hi in this place. Okay, I got you.
Right.
The other one is in the cafeteria, there's like so many tables. and you only see one person sitting there. And the crazy thing is that you don't even feel welcome to go sit there because you feel like you're getting into that person's space.
You're invading.
It's just so weird. It is so, so weird. So there's definitely that. Like, I must say that here, I definitely became more of an introvert than when I was back home. And I mean, it did me, I learned a lot from that and I grew from that. But it's definitely something that is very different because you just like, even just calling your friend and say, hey, I'm outside. It's like, okay, hi, are you ready? Are you free like Sunday at 10 a.m.?
Yeah.
It's like everything is so scheduled and it's so structured that it's hard to just sometimes be spontaneous because there's always this like little things that you cannot control that are determining your life, your pace, whatever. So, yeah.
It's funny that you talk about the way you were received in school because my experience with college here was different. Even though I dropped out because of college is not for people like me. I actually have some cool friends now. One of them is Jared Young and Taylor. And we've actually gone hiking. And the way we became friends was really hard. In class, we had two classes together and they would just, you know, we'll sit by each other and just talk, have small talk and just have these chats. But I end up being friends with them because Taylor saw this sticker from No Small Creator and I was like, oh yeah, you know No Small Creator? I was like, yeah, I met with Cody. Like anybody who knows, is a movement basically that essentially says there's no such thing as a small creator. Everybody, whatever people create is awesome. So it was about the thing of if you don't have a million subscribers on YouTube, then you're nothing or you're small. So The whole point is there's no such thing as a small creator. And so, yeah, we hung out on that and then found out that he does videos, photography, and then that's been it. So I'm still the introvert. And funny enough, I think both of them are introvert. No, Taylor is definitely an introvert. Jared, not so much. But for me, those relationships have lived out of college and we hang out now, we work together, we talk, we send each other memes. So in a weird way, I feel like I've actually had more friends. Like Danny, for example, we met at a poetry event and then we said we should have coffee and then we talk and then before we realized we work on Soul Story. So in that particular aspect of, you know, people, I think for me, I don't know if it's a thing that I have or what, but I've been able to actually build stronger relationships with individuals, maybe not groups. I don't like large groups, but individual relationships have worked for me. Great. Yeah.
Oh yeah. To come back to that, like not saying like it is possible to build those relationships because even me, my first friend here and longest friend with whom I'm still in touch now, we met in school and it was my first semester here, but in like a general speaking way of speaking, it's harder to just go to people because sometimes you're not sure whether or not you're allowed to come there. Or sometimes it can just be the facial expression. You know, if you have someone who's smiling at you, okay, I can come. But if you have this person who's so into their phone, like concentrated, you're like, okay, stay away. So like there's those people. And you know, it's funny, actually, the friendships I made here, a lot of time it's easier with like Africans or with people who come from another country because we can easily relate to the experiences and be like, oh yeah, are you from, oh yeah, I'm from here too. Oh, how was this? And that's it. Then next thing you know, we're out there to this weird party or something like that. So it's possible to do those. I just feel like it's a little bit harder just to like approach people. But funnily enough, when you do approach them, they're chill, they're friendly. It's just like, come on, show something that will make me want to come to you. I don't need to like think 10 minutes before coming to you because you're having this, I don't know, you have this
moment.
Having a moment. And the moment sometimes lasts like an hour. So it's like, I don't know what to do.
For the whole semester. So
I love this so much, Femi, because I am like a shining example of what you're talking about.
Shame on you. That's why he laughed when I said that 1 second smile thing. Shame on you, man.
I am like, I have the most neutral white guy face and it's so hard to read
to start
me
using
for people.
That.
Oh my God.
Smile more, Danny.
I know. I'm just like, you know.
It's like, you sure you're having a good time?
Yeah. I'm like, I'm doing great.
It got even worse for me when we moved to Pueblo because I guess there's like 5 black people in Pueblo. So I think sometimes And, you know, people sometimes say they forget that they are black. I think I've had some of those seconds where I'm like, oh, wait, I'm not. Oh, yeah, I'm not one of, you know, it's different. I'm different, basically. It's easy to forget that you just merge. Like, you go to Walmart. It's like everywhere is like, you know, you see enough white people that you forget.
Oh, and then there's that weird thing. Not weird. It's actually amazing when you meet another black person and you just do the nod. It's like, yeah. I feel your struggle. I feel you. Go on. You got this. That's it. And then you just move on.
Yeah, it's like you have to learn and, you know, talk about being black and especially the current racial climate. There is so much I feel that people who move here, maybe as adults, especially Africans who move here as adults, don't understand about racism in America. And then they are like, in my theory is that there are two schools of such Africans, of people, immigrants. There's one school that doesn't want to hear anything about it, doesn't care. It's like, that's an American thing. I'm here to just do my thing. And then there's another school, which I'm hoping that more people can join, is people actually can say, I don't really know what's going on here. I need to educate myself. Because I think a lot of people don't really get what's happening. And unfortunately, just because I'm black, just so happens that anybody who is promoting the racist system just puts me in the blanket of everybody else. So it's sort of, I have to educate myself so I don't get caught even without wanting to be caught. Mm-hmm. And that's something that moving to Pueblo and just dealing with life here, I've had to realize, well, I'm actually very ignorant about race and I need to educate myself. And yeah, I don't know about you, Femi. Is that something that you always knew, or did you have like an awakening at some point, or you just, you know, were born knowing this thing?
I was aware of some stuff even from Benin. Like, I never pictured this place as, you know, the perfect thing that many people believe back home is like the El Dorado. I knew there were going to be some struggles, but it's really when I got here that I realized the extent to which it actually gets to you and it actually affects your life. And, you know, just a simple example that many people don't even think is a big deal, like the fact that you're the only black person in the classroom, like literally you feel the pressure of representing the whole black community, because if you do good, everybody's like, oh, no, that's just her. But if you do bad, it's like, yeah, see, there's black people, they don't do anything. So,
and you feel that like as just being over here for a few years.
Yeah, you just sit there and you're like, wait a second. And, you know, just some comments, some things, oh, you're beautiful for a black person. Oh my God, how did you get here? So it's like you realize that, oh yeah, you realize that deep down, like the reality of Africans, even in the countries themselves, is different from that of black Americans. But when you come here, people see you as black before anything else. So of course you still have your African side, but you're still going to live through the same experiences that black Americans are going through. So if you just like close your eyes to it, eventually you're just hurting yourself, because the system is not hurting others. It's still hurting you, even if you're not aware of it. So it is very important to take the time and actually educate ourselves on those things, because it's part of our life and there's nothing like whether or not you decide to ignore it or not, it is true. So it's just best to learn of ways to address it and to maybe even change a few people around us that are doing things that they're not even aware of. So,
yeah. A lot of education.
I'm curious if you've also experienced for the first time you having to say you're African versus like the specific country you're from.
Oh my God. You know, at some point you just pull out the African's card. But a lot of time, I think typically when people ask me where I'm from, I will say I'm from the Republic of Benin in West Africa. And they're like, oh, I'm like, do you know where that is? No. Okay, you see Nigeria. It's right next to Nigeria. So I guess I have to thank God that Nigeria exists, or else nobody will ever know where Benin is. But most of the time, I do make sure to say it, because I'm tired of people asking me if I know this guy who's from South Africa. It's like, I don't even know my happen? Neighbor. Oh, man, don't even get me started. Like the things people ask you, like there's this guy.
That's
he's
amazing.
He's from Ghana. Do you know him? Or the best one yet is, okay, they'll ask you, where are you from? I answer, and they're like, oh, yeah, my sister-in-law actually worked in a mission thing back in Kenya.
In South Africa.
I'm like, okay, like, good for her. Amazing. How is that related to what I'm saying? You don't go and tell, like, someone from France that your brother-in-law went to Germany to do this thing. It's like, come on, guys. At some point, you gotta start. Yeah, like, you gotta think it through. Don't just say stuff just to, like, build up the conversation. You can just be like, oh, okay. Good to know. Something simple.
Right, you can listen. You know? Ask a question.
Exactly. Oh, but that thing also, I must say, at some point, it gets tiring because I used to work at World Market, and in about like 6-7 hours, I would get over 6+ people asking me, where are you originally from? And I'm just like, come on, not again. To the point where even my boss came and asked me, so how many times are you asked this question, Femi?
I'm like, you just write a manual and just give them. Just
I swear. Print. They're like, people tell me, some of my coworkers are like, you know what? On your name tab, just ask Femi Nasi from the Republic of Benin next to Nigeria. For more information, $5. You know, just something. Jesus, at some point, you don't even think about it anymore. It just comes out because you're so used to being asked that question, you know.
And that's exhausting for you.
It is.
I think it'll be exhausting for everybody. It just got me thinking about when I moved and I was calling myself husband, immigrant, storyteller. And I boxed myself into this place where I started hating my own writing because I was writing about the same things over and over and over and over. I just couldn't. It's exhausting to having to explain yourself and talk about, oh, this is how America is. This is how immigration is. This is what it is. And you get burnt out. Just talk about these same ideas. But then I'll get tired and then I'll realize I still have a lot to write about because it still doesn't make sense that people will think about it. And it's not just Americans. It's also people back in Cameroon who think about America or have this perspective about money and work. And people tell you, oh, you're in America now. You have internet access. You have all these tools. What are you complaining about? And then you find yourself having to explain to Americans where you're coming from. And you have to explain to those in Cameroon where you are at. So it's just, you're not
just constantly explaining.
Constantly. Like, even when everything was going on with the murder of George Floyd, like, I saw many, like, a friend of mine or an old classmate texted me and said, hey, Femi, so, is it real what's going on right now in the U.S.? Like, or is it just the media that's showing everything? I was like, child, sit down. Like, I sent her so many voice notes saying, look, what you're seeing, that's just today.
The tip of the iceberg.
That's just like, that's like the routine we're living in.
We just happen to take it serious this time.
Exactly. This time was just a little time because everybody was bored because of Corona. We needed something to keep us busy. So we're all like, yeah, Black Lives Matter, but give it a few moments. Like, while we're talking about that, someone else will tell, someone else will this. Like, it is a reality that people are constantly living through. And it's been years. It's been hundreds of years. And so, yes, it is real. And so what the media typically shows you about the U.S., that is what you should question. This thing, this is the real thing. This is what's going on. And, like, in a way, I'm happy that more people are seeing things the way they are. But on the other side, I'm just like, come on, like, people are tired. Like, how many times do you have to have this conversation? Like, literally, there was a day during that time when I was sitting outside and I asked my brother, you know, take your bag and go do something. You've been watching TV for so long. And he went out. Then I saw a police car and I was like, don't get up. Don't get up. Don't get up. I didn't want to become paranoid.
Wow.
But I was a little bit paranoid. So I got up. And I was like, where's that boy? And a few seconds later, he came back. And I was like, why did you come back? He's like, Also, there was a cop car there. And I was like, okay. The boy also sees it. Like, he's 12. He came here last year. And it's exhausting.
Yeah.
It is exhausting. But I guess you just got to keep talking about it. Because if you don't do, like, first of all, if we don't, who will? And I don't know. There's only so much we can do. So,
still have a life to live after all. It's like with everything that's happening, even with the whole country, we still have, like, in my own house, we still have health issues that we need to deal with that have nothing to do with racism.
Life goes on.
Like, life still goes on no matter what happens. So it's funny. It's like the whole, because I'm, I, I guess I used to be, or I still am, but I'm a huge self-improvement junkie. I read a lot of self-improvement. I write a lot of self-improvement. So it's like a lot of what is going on and the trials and tribulations of moving, of adapting, of changing, of becoming more self-aware. A lot of what's happening in 2020, I feel, for me, people like me who've been reading a lot of this content, allows us to sort of prepare for it. And there's a fine line, you know, with the work that Danny does for Soul Stories, the fine line between accepting your emotions and also just, you know, not paying attention to what you shouldn't be paying attention to and just looking at what can I do today? What step can I take forward? Because there's a fine line between, oh, let's just reject, nothing's happening, everything is great, we're going to be fine. And then accepting like, okay, this sucks, but I can't keep crying all day. Let me cry for like a few hours. Because sometimes I've had to just sit down and just give up. Like yesterday night, I was so tired and I had this fever. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to edit anything today. I'm going to bed. And that was like a win for me. And as an immigrant, I feel like very few people have the chance to even have those conversations because you leave these people in Cameroon, you leave these people in Benin, in home, and then you move here. And their expectations, like there's this layer of expectations of my elder brother is in the US. I mean, even when they don't say it, like you don't have to actually voice it out. This
just
is
just feel it.
Just feel like I am in a better position to help out. So you're carrying the hopes and dreams of the whole family, which it can be exhausting. I call it the soft spin of immigration.
Like that's true.
Yeah.
I'm actually writing a whole book on it because it can get to a point where you don't realize how burnt out you are because you're just pushing through.
Yeah. And everybody thinking you're living your best life just because you took an Instagram video with like Starbucks or something. It's like, bro, I worked 20 hours to get that freaking Starbucks. I'm gonna
that Starbucks
enjoy it.
Costs like a quarter of my paycheck.
It's like, come on, it's the little wins, it's the thing that are keeping me alive. And that's just it. They forget. Like, I think one of the greatest thing is that like the currency difference, like because here you have $1 over there in Benin, that's like 500.
Same you thing, can come
do
on.
Like you can do.
You can do you use France CFA? Do you also use France CFA in Benin?
Yeah.
Oh, so we have dollar, currency basically. All colonizers, colonizer currency in French Francophone Africa basically.
Uh huh. Yeah. But honestly, like with like what $1,000 in Benin, you can get a piece of land. You know, there's like all of those things. So people think in terms of that. They don't think in terms of everything. Like here we have the technological hey, you know, the language is hard, man. I'm forgetting them all. We have the technological whatever the word is.
Are you got it. You got it.
And and like all of that, so people see those, and that's what typically like development is seen as. You know, you have Wi-Fi, you have this, you have that, you have those materials you can rely on, but they don't see the societal aspect of things. They don't see the stress you have to deal with. They don't see the mental illnesses. They don't see the pressure, the dark times, the questioning, the comparison, all of the things that come with the developed countries. Like they don't see all of that because everything that is put in light is just the materials that you have, the resources, the car that you buy, the clothes that you have. So it's interesting to see how much of a difference there is with like, I don't know, it's just that whole thing. It's amazing, you know. Sometimes I just sit and I'm like, this world.
Yeah, it's crazy. It sounds like there's like all these assumptions being put on both you from America, and then there's assumptions being put on you from back home.
Yeah.
Does it feel like it's hard to be seen, like for who you actually like see yourself as?
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually a very interesting question because a lot of the reason why my writing is suffering is really because I'm not able to think clearly because you always have these thoughts of like, all right, need to go to do my job because if I don't do my job, my family doesn't have money. So you're always looking at the needs and what is required of you more than what you actually want. And to see myself requires me to actually think for myself and think about what I want. And it's like there's this whole process of undoing where when I moved, I was like, me, I want this, I want that, I want to try Xbox, I want to use the internet, Netflix, yay. Then at a certain point, you realize, wow, there's responsibilities here. I'm no longer just me. I have people to take care of. I have responsibilities. I have a role to play. And slowly but surely, I can catch myself now in that place where if I'm not careful about the goals I'm setting, the actions I'm taking, I'm doing everything for everyone else except myself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I feel that. So for me, it was kind of like going from one extreme to the other, because for the first, let's say 4 years that I've been here, I was more focused on, you know, building myself. I was more like kind of self-centered because nothing else was going on in my life and I had to build myself up, you know, do my, figure out my dream, school, all of that. And so I kind of buried myself like in work. So I became this like workaholic to the point where my mom actually picked it up. And that's to tell you how bad it was. Like if your mom is telling you you're working too hard, then you're working way too hard. So at some point, because I started seeing myself only as, you know, writer, poet, this and that, the times when I didn't have any desire to write or to speak, I felt like I was a fraud and there was nothing else to me than that, you know? So it was hard to see myself beyond just those labels I had become used to using for myself. And then like this last year, since my brother's been here, I kind of had a different thing going on because now it wasn't just about me. I had to put my brother in the addition as well. It was about raising him, you know, think about his school, race, sexuality, all of those things that typically a 23-year-old doesn't have to deal with. I had to deal with those. So like this last year has been more of an adjustment for me to kind of find the balance between myself, my dreams, and then the responsibility that I have like at home and in regards to my brother.
Hi, everyone. I want to pause this conversation to tell you a little bit about Soul Stories and how you can support. Our mission is to host conversations that facilitate personal healing, human connection, and social change. We host a wide variety of online and in-person events, as well as this podcast. Check them out and engage with them at soulstoriesdenver.com or on Facebook and Instagram. This organization is completely volunteer-led, and we are working day in and day out to bring people together, fight loneliness, and work towards healing ourselves and society. If you believe in this work, please consider signing up for Patreon or sending a donation to our Soul Stories Venmo account. Both are linked in the description. Thank you for listening, and now back to the episode.
For me, it's, I feel like at the end of the day, it's more about myself, you know, just getting rid of the boxes I put myself in and just going with the flow and like doing things because I want to do them, but not losing myself within them and just realizing that it is okay to just change and to lose interest in some things. And it is okay to just grow and to go with the flow. So right now, it's more about myself, like getting comfortable with that idea of just letting go and going with the flow. So, yeah.
I'm curious because you both talk about mental health a lot in your work, in your art. And did that get ignited when you moved over here, or were you already thinking about mental health in your home countries?
I think I was already thinking about it, but then I guess in my own way, I was a little bit, honestly, lucky. The environment in which I was, and I say environment, I mean, essentially my wife, Queenie, was one where she was already doing medicine for a while. So she was already exposed a lot of that. She'd been in the US for what, almost 12, 13 years by the time. So we talked about it. And even before I moved here, was already suggestions of, oh, I'll see a therapist eventually because everybody needs to see a therapist at some point. And so when it didn't really accentuate much, except when I realized how important it was to actually talk about feelings and talk about things that we don't usually talk about. Comparing, especially with the African home and the way things are dealt with, like the way children are punished, the way children are encouraged, the way they are supported. Even without a degree in psychology, without even a deeper understanding of what that is, you're like, yeah, this is not healthy. This is not the way people should be brought up in the world. And a lot of that changed for me. And the reason I write about it a lot more is because I had to think. And when you're in the US, you're usually mostly by yourself. So if you cannot think and be alone with your own thoughts, it gets really hard to just exist. And I guess I had enough time to think about it and to, I had, you know, the skill to write about it. And that's something that allowed me to explore, because for me, writing is that process of thinking through things. So when my thoughts are not clear, my writing is not clear. And being able to talk about these things and, you know, juxtapose the stories and share them out and eventually even discover what I'm actually talking about, because sometimes some of the stories that I write, I don't know what they are until they're finished. Like, I've been talking about a plane crash, and then by the time I'm done, I'm thinking about existential crisis of like, well, what if I die today? Will I feel like I've lived my life? It started like a regular, you know, travel, enjoying immigrant life, but then it ends up questioning my existence, basically. So for me, it grew, but not where I feel like it would have been the same if I was in Cameroon. It just so happens that here I got exposed to more of it.
So for me, it's coming here that made me see it. Because back home, like, I came here when I left Benin when I was 18 and all of that. And the only thing I was used to back then was just, you know, like, feelings of loneliness. Loneliness was like my best friend back then. But the thing is that over there, it was more of a, it was imposed on me. It wasn't a choice. And so like that hurt. And I guess there were times
where. What was imposed on you?
The loneliness. Like, it wasn't a choice. It wasn't that I wanted to be alone. It's just that, you know, things going on. I have like friends, but they have their own life, their own things. So I was alone a lot of times where I felt lonely. That was a feeling I was used to, but I never really thought about.
Are you saying this was imposed on you here or in Benin?
Oh no, in Benin. So right now I'm still talking about Benin.
Oh, okay. What do you mean by it being imposed on you?
So like when I think typically when I think of the whole being alone thing, when it's a choice, it's different because you want it. You want to be by yourself. You want to have that time for yourself. But when on the other side, you just really don't have a choice because your friends are there or you don't have friends or all of that. It feels like it's forced upon you. So I'm talking more about that. And so for me, it was mostly the second one where I felt lonely because I didn't have people around me. Like, I was surrounded, but just those deep moments of sharing that you have with people, a lot of times I felt like I was lacking them. And a lot of time I felt like I was just by myself and nobody was there, even though people were there. You know, it's weird sometimes.
No, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
I guess at that time I had experienced some, you know, depression, stress, all of that. But what really got to me and what I really acknowledged was the loneliness. But then when I came here, the loneliness was still there. But what I then experienced the most was the depression. And that was the time where I realized, oh, this is a thing. So I wasn't familiar with the idea of depression back then because it's not talked about, you know. If you're going through something, it's typically sadness or whatever. And, you know, go pray, talk to your family, talk to your friend. But it's not like, oh, you're going through like depression or anxiety or whatever. And so when I got here, that's when I really had those really, really like dark moments where I didn't want to get out. I didn't want to do anything. I felt like this was the end, all of those things. And I was like, okay, what's going on here? And I started doing more research about it. But funnily, it's really through my writing that I discovered it, you know. When I came here in the beginning, I saw it as, you know, this dark self of mine. Because people typically see me as, you know, an extrovert who's always smiling, who's always happy and all of that. But it felt like once I came back home and I was alone, it was the complete opposite. It was very dark. It was very...
Like a shadow self.
Yeah. My shadow self. And I used to like talk about her, you know, like she was like my demon, she was this, that. And that was me actually going through the process of acknowledging it, but not knowing that it was something that was normal. I thought that it was just about me. And I thought that I literally something was wrong with me. And so my first writings were really dark to the point where people would ask me like, why do you only talk about dark stuff? And I would just be like, no. I don't know. It just comes and I write about it. I don't question the feelings. And so it's later that I started researching it and learning more about it and seeing how it affects people and how it can be differently experienced by people. And so it was really here that I, like, it got more intense and it definitely got accentuated, because I guess back there, like, the fact that I also have, like, family and friends to kind of, like, run away from the feelings, I never had to really question what was going on. I just felt it. But here it's like, okay, you are alone. And I ended up accepting the alone moments, the point where now I actually want to be alone. You know, I spend a lot of time by myself, which helps me reflect on the emotion that I feel, the feeling, the experiences, and all of that. So, like, I just say that here, being here definitely made me face, like, the mental part of my being compared to back home, where it was just the physical and it was just like everything that is, that can be seen, compared to the things that can only be felt and, you know, mentally experienced. So that's
so interesting. Both you kind of touch on it, and I kind of asked that as a leading question, kind of like to talk shit about America, to be like, we are such an isolated culture. But after you said that, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. That's like, there's two sides to that.
There's two sides, yeah, because no matter how this culture, I mean, it is true that I feel like this culture definitely, like, enhances that feeling and creates more of it because of everything, the responsibility, the stress, the pressure, all of that.
A lack of community.
Yes, you know, the just like you having to be alone and dealing with your things alone.
You know what's funny? Though, sorry for interrupting for me. It's like the whole idea of community and solidarity that a lot of Africans, and I'm using the term loosely here, talk about, you know, Africa and the way it's there, and, you know, with videos like Black is King and Black Panther.
Oh, yeah,
and the
thing,
idea that, you know,
that's not good
in that life in Africa is a utopia for all Black people. It's getting me to think a lot about what people don't really understand about, even back in Cameroon before I moved here, just take Cameroon alone. There's a lot of segregation within the country between the French-speaking and the English-speaking parts of the country. That's a whole other book by itself. But people fail to see that, I think, each community gets the community deserves. In America, I still think there is community. I see people who are building, like, take for example, in Denver, there's like people who are poets, writers, who come together because of these mutual, you know, needs and wants. In the continent, the dark side of the community of the continent most people don't actually talk about, which might bring me heat now, is because there are people who, if, for example, if you have a lot of money, people listen to you in Cameroon. If you're the richest member of the family, you get respect, basically, because people want to be subservient, knowing that you give them money eventually. And there are dark aspects of that community life, which is when you try to go against the grain and do your thing, you get rejected, become the black sheep. If you're a child who doesn't want to become a medical doctor, I know he works in America, it's almost the same thing, but you could get the kind of wrath that is also backed by the society. It's like, there are no jobs for people who don't do this kind of thing. Like, why do you want to do that? So a lot of what people see and be like, oh, Cameroon is better in terms of community than the US or this, is like, you don't really know what you're talking about, because there are too many layers at play for you to just say things are better here or there. I used to say this a lot in my writing when I moved, is America and Cameroon or America and Benin, there's no better or worse. It's like, it's just different. Different problems, different communities, different issues. You can compare them, but never think that if you take one aspect from one and put in the other one, it would suddenly be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see what you mean. And like, I actually agree, because even for me, when I talk about community, it's only to a certain extent, because I feel like when you take America, and I hate how we say America to say the United States. Like, I hate that, but it's like, everybody says this, we just say it's like the United States. When you take the US and then when you take Africa, I guess, I feel like we often see the two extremes of the same thing. Like, here is the individuality that comes out the most, you know, the be you, your own thing, blah, 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 all of that. And back there, it's the group, it's the people, it's us coming together.
La familia.
La familia, all of that. But the thing is that those two still have their own negative sides. Like, they talk about community, but there's the pressure that comes with it. There's, you know, the black sheep thing, because the moment you start doing things for yourself, trying to be more individualistic, it's like, this is not what we do here. Here you listen to your peers. But over here, when you want to have more, it's like, you know, you need to be your own person, because that's how you show that you can do this, you're independent. And to come back to that whole thing about Black is King, like, I watched that, I was like, funny. Like, it's artistically, it's beautiful, it's all of that. But I feel like, unfortunately, we're getting to this point where people start, like, thinking of Africa as the, you know, over there, Black is King, Black is this, Black is that. And I'm just, sometimes I just want to say, you know, even our ancestors, like, because we talk a lot about ancestors and all of that, not everyone was a king, not everyone was a queen. Because if that was the case, nobody would be king or queen. Like, it simply is not possible.
It's a very logical response, yeah.
You know, but the thing is that many, many people, and I see it especially here in, you know, the Black community, because we want something to, like, empower us, we end up having this idea of Africa as the perfect place, when even back then and up to now, things are not perfect. So it's always about, like, finding a certain balance and being careful not to start idealizing, like, a certain place, because you don't see its dark side until you're living there. And sometimes even when you live there, you don't even see it, because it's not affecting you, because you have whatever privilege. So
American privilege. No.
You know,
oh, I'm talking about Africa.
It's,
I thought you were saying, like, if an American were to go to Africa, they would have an American privilege.
Oh,
no, just have a white privilege. Because the color of your skin is white, you don't care whether American, French, mm-hmm. whatever, unless you're educated. And when I say, I still use this term loosely, because people think I'm saying Africans are not educated. No, it's like, people don't understand, for example, that if you're from France, your culture, your history, and the way you relate to, for example, a country like Cameroon, which had French colonizers, there's a certain dynamic that is different, but people don't never think about it. Just say white person money. So yeah, when you say American privilege, I think that's what you're saying. Like, you see a person and you just assume this person has money, they're better off. And usually what we try to do, when I say we, like Africans, we try to swindle you from your money and tell you to buy things 10x the price, basically. But yeah, just talking about this, I'm thinking I should start a whole podcast where we say Africa is not what you think. That's the podcast title.
Yeah, but careful, you might want to wait a little bit on that. unless you want to die now, because right? Hey, it's like, it's,
yeah,
all
you're
good.
About to get canceled, Kamga.
I don't have an audience, so yeah.
That's good. So when you do get the audience, you're gonna be double canceled.
They're, I wanted to recruit you, Femi. Let's talk about these things.
I'm careful, you know, such thing, because it's such sensitive topic. It's like, you can only say it to a certain extent, like, because I feel like if a platform is created where only that is talked about, people will lose sight of what the purpose is. They will only think of it as, anti-Africa, anti-this. They won't see it as, oh, you know, this is great, but think about this. Don't just be like, oh, okay, so this is what you're saying.
I don't care. I want haters. Haters.
Look, that's, you
haters
say that.
Fuel you, Kamga.
That's what you say for your shield. We all know. Yeah.
We all want validation. That's why we're all creating content.
Hey, nobody likes my posts anymore on Facebook anyway. I might as well do whatever the hell I want.
I mean, look, Facebook is a different. Facebook, I just see Facebook. I'm like, I just go there to lose time.
You have time to lose? Okay.
Yes, well. I make time to lose. Look, we're all busy, but you can let's.
She's saying get off the high horse.
I'm saying that. But seriously, like, sometimes you just want to, you know, just want, you know, 5 minutes of break, because, like, the moment I don't want to be this workaholic. The one I was like last year. It's like, it's something I like to work, and I like to be productive, but I know that it can also become addictive, where you're just like, okay, what's the next? What's the next? What's the next?
Right.
And then you end up living
satisfaction.
Because you're just going. So right now I allow myself to just be, even if, like, for a whole day I don't do anything. I'm like, whatever.
I just can't, especially with social media, because if that's where you lose it, I have an issue with that because of social media. If you say, you know what, I don't want to hang out and do nothing, I'm like, mazel tov. Nothing is better than social media, personally. I would rather sit for 5 minutes and do nothing than to take that dopamine hit that Mark Zuckerberg is making us consume without even realizing it. But that's just me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I want to bring you guys back. Was there a time, like, before you had moved from your countries where you felt like you wanted to express a part of yourself and you weren't able to, or there was pushback?
For me, no. I'm actually doing a series of YouTube videos on how I quit college 3 times. And there's the whole story about moving to doing different degree programs, biochemistry, medical laboratory science, journalism. And I started writing online in 2012. And really, I would say in most African communities or African countries, particularly Cameroon, as a writer, the people that you're mostly afraid of are your parents and what they would say, that, hey, you shouldn't talk about these things. But I guess I was lucky that my dad, my mom were pretty much open to the idea of exploration of creativity, because they didn't push me to write. They didn't actually give me books to read. They were just like, oh, that's something that you're okay, cool. So it was a thing that they allowed. So I never felt like I had to, if anything, I felt encouraged to continue. And sometimes I actually feel that if I stayed in Cameroon, my writing would have taken me further than it is right now, because when I moved to the US now, I found myself almost boxed in writing about immigration and then losing touch of the context of the life in Cameroon. So it's been a very difficult 2 years trying to find my voice again, because I no longer have things to write about that relate to the people that I'm writing to. And so, yeah, just to answer the question, no, I never really felt like I could not express myself. I actually feel now that I don't know what I'm supposed to say, because I don't know who I'm talking to.
What would you, before you jump in, Femi, what would you have written about if you were still in Cameroon, do you think?
I'd probably be writing about the political climate, the entrepreneurial climate, especially the technological climate, because there are many young Cameroonians who are in the tech space and the entertainment space and doing a lot of things that CNN would never cover, right. No major media house will ever do. And there are people, even in the literary landscape, like I started a couple of poetry events. I was doing a lot of those by myself, getting people together and organizing these things. So these are things that I was able to do because the land was sort of empty. People weren't doing it. There weren't many people who were qualified to do it. And people were interested. And I think if I was back there, what I'll be doing is a lot of that kind of work of really writing about the things that matter to people where I was living and talking about ideas that I thought could move the country forward. But now, if I do that, I'm sitting on high horse, essentially, and telling people what to do. So I think in this question, what I'm seeing is sometimes you people think you only gain from moving to a new country like the US, but you might lose more than you even realize that you've lost. And that's something that I'm still coming to terms with. It's not, I don't even know if I'm done yet. Realizing that what I'm writing, very few people actually care about, because it's no longer related directly to something that I cared about.
Hmm. Yeah, I feel you. I think for me, the answer is no as well, because I feel like before I came here, I didn't have that need to really say anything specific. Like for me, writing the book, I never dreamt of being a writer or whatever. It wasn't a dream of mine or even a hope of mine. It was just the means to an end, because when I came here and my first year was the way it was, let's just say that. Like I realized that so many people back home like had this false idea of what it was to come here and to continue your studies or to just come here and live here, because they think it's all perfect, it's all this, it's all that. So for me, the book was really about showing a more realistic image of what it is to come here. And also to show that, and that's the reason why we have two stories, to show that every adventure, every journey is unique to the person who's going through it. Like what I'm going through is not the same that you're going to go through, but there will be similarities. And it's those things that can allow me to tell you that, hey, you're not alone. You know, if we were able to do this, then you can do it as well. So I think it wasn't really because I didn't have that need to talk about anything, to communicate or anything. I didn't feel like I couldn't express myself. And when I came here, I saw things, I analyzed things, and I was like, you know what? I want to talk about those things. And today I feel like I'm getting to the point where like I'm just ending that cycle of where I was and the things I was talking about, because I feel like I've already said what I had to say about those things. And then now it's time to start a new cycle, to learn new things in order to give back. Like, I remember in the beginning, even just with poetry, and it's crazy I'm saying that because I started, 2 years ago? I would sit down back then and literally would just take me a few minutes to have this crazy thing and to build upon it, to put out a video. Now I start, I'm like, I already talked about this. I don't want to talk just for the sake of talking. I don't want to create just so I can keep having followers. I want to create content that is of quality. And I feel like in order to do that, I need to experience some things or learn some things or just see new things in order to give back. So right now, that's where I am. Like, I'm kind of taking the step back to make sure that I am fully finishing this cycle I am in order to move to the next step and bring things that are really valuable to people. That's why I feel like right now, I'm working on my poetry book, finally. And nice. So that will be like the end of the cycle for me. That will be like the whole 2015 to 2020 Femi. And it's like, okay, this is it. This is me here. That's done. And then the next step is the one I'm starting with, season 2 of the podcast. But even with that, I feel like there's something that's missing, but I'm not worried about it anymore. I'm just, when I feel the need to say something, I will say, but I will not push myself to express things that really everybody else is saying or that just won't bring any valuable thing except from like adding another content on my Instagram or something like that.
What's next for both of you? Like, you both kind of expressed this transition feeling or phase that you're kind of going through and what you want to create and how you want to give back. And I'm curious what you guys see for your futures.
It's clear that I can't work for anyone. It used to be a doubt, something that I used to have doubts, like maybe I should just find a job that I like or something. But the more I read, the more I reflect and write down my plans and think about what I want to do, it just gets very clear to me that the biggest mistake I can make in my life is to ignore the fact that I want to be able to be not self-employed, but have businesses that allow me to do whatever the hell I want. So for me, what I'm building now is a foundation with the skills that will allow me to become more valuable and make money, like upfront. I want to make more money because in this country and in the world, the more money you have stashed somewhere, the more you can do whatever you want. Because right now I do have a job, I work from home, and I'm grateful that in 2020 with COVID, I still have a job, but I could get fired tomorrow and there's nothing I'll do about it. I could fall sick and I can't work and they wouldn't pay me for being sick. So there are just so many aspects that are driving my mission now that have almost nothing to do with the US, my wife, anybody. It's more like I need to be in a place where I can do certain things. And for me to do that, the next 5-10 years require me to wake up early, to write, to make videos, to learn skills. So I'm in that place where I'm really just acquiring and trying things. So where Femi, for example, is saying, oh, she doesn't want to put content. I'm like, I need to put more content because I don't know where I'm going to. Like, I need to actually put out a lot more to find out what I really want to do. So that's the mind frame I'm at now, is trying different things, putting out more content and building that foundation.
What's your vision? Like, concretely, what would you like for your life? What would you be creating? Would you have a business? Would it be YouTube?
It would be all of the things. Like, the reason why I cannot be concrete is I really want to be able to wake up in the morning and do whatever I want. I know it sounds like a utopic, stupid dream, but it's one of those.
That's my dream too. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to be able to wake up and say, oh, I would like to make a movie about this hero in Cameroon, and I can afford to do it. I can find, like, okay, who can be a good actor? I might not be able to do it myself, but I can produce it. I want to get to the point where I can say, there's no book on this subject. I would like to write the book, and I write it. So I'm moving towards that kind of business. So media business, YouTube, I'm working on YouTube, my channel. I got, 850 subscribers today, which is great. And right now I'm working towards getting that 1,000 subscribers and getting the 4,000 hours of watch time. And then on Medium, I have almost, 5,000 plus. Instagram is killing me. It's not working out. Facebook is not working out for some reason. I don't know. But money is, for me, is the best measure. It's not followers. It's not likes. It's really how much money can I make with my skills. And right now I'm getting some web design skills to be able to get hired to build sites. So if I can write and I can build sites and I can edit podcasts and I can do all these things, then I'm really laying down my chances to get to that point where I can make money from those skills.
Well, you have so many, your fucking skills, man. You're so capable. I mean, even with this podcast, what you create is so beautiful. So I just wanted to shout you out a little bit for that.
Thanks, man. The last skill I need and what I'm building on is business, because business is a skill. You can be talented all you want, creative, but if you don't know how to sell or market or buy or do all the things, yeah, it's a waste of time.
Okay. So I think for me, as of right now, it's about finding balance in all aspects of my life. So I was talking earlier about the fact that a cycle just ended. And for me, like, I felt that because many things had changed in my life. Like, you know, at home, just with my brother and my stepdad and the way things work, like, I got to a better place where it's like, okay, you guys need to deal with this so I can deal with that. I got to a better place. Like, I got myself a new car. Like, I got a new job. And like, I don't, it was just, I cut my hair. So it's hard to say it now because like there's many things going on, but a few weeks ago, it was really like, I ended with the past things and now I'm starting a new one because I have a new foundation and I'm starting over. So how that specifically worked is like, in terms of, you know, work-life balance, for example, the reason why I really like my job is that it's completely remote, regardless of COVID. So this, for me, is the greatest thing I could ask for, because it means that I can literally be anywhere in the world and still do my job. And I mean, it's not the perfect, it's not the end of it, because I can get paid more and I got to get the skills. And so I'm going to school for that. So professionally speaking, right now, it's just about working. You know, it's just about going to school, getting that degree so I can leverage more. It's about getting that experience so I can also leverage more. So in terms of that professional aspect of my life, things are good. In terms of my personal project, I feel like it's where it's supposed to be. Like, I'm just really going with the flow. I'm going to work on the podcast, and mainly it's going to be that. Like, once the book is over, I'm going to start working on learning more so I can give more. And in terms of just my personal life, I think right now, when I see myself in the future, it's really about finding the balance between every aspect of my life. You know, work, being able to work, and also to work on my own personal things. For me, that's what I want. Like, I think now I am realizing how much that balance matters to me. Like, I don't mind working for someone, but only if I also have the time to do my own things. And so having one to rely on and the other to feed my soul makes me, like, I feel fulfilled. And so when I think about those projects specifically, when I think about it in the future, like, I think the goal is just to tell stories and to just, it's just about telling stories and having an impact and helping people process and acknowledge their own journey. So for me, it's really about getting to that point where I can see that, oh, okay, this story that I helped put out help this person or that other person and is just contributing to people's lives. So as of now, that's where I am.
I feel like a Pharisee.
What's that?
I feel like a Pharisee. in the Bible, there are people who just gathered all the riches and did not want to share with anybody. They're just listening to you talk. I'm like, damn, I'm such an evil money monger.
Yeah, but if you listen to the last episode I had you on, it was all about making an impact.
So go ahead and listen to that last episode to make sure you don't have the wrong ideas about Kamga.
The thing about impact I realize is it's value. And if all what I'm talking about, you know, the idea of money, if I'm not actually doing
just
something
say stuff
that is valuable,
to like ease your conscience.
You know what? It's fine. I give up.
He wants the money. Give him the money. But he'll give you good content though. So it's fair game, you know? It's fair game.
I hear you though, Kamga, because I am in a field of like working and with Soul Stories where I feel like the whole thing is about making an impact. So then whenever I talk about it, I don't talk about the impact. I'm just like, I just want to get paid to do this. Like, so then it feels like all I'm talking about is making money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But just to come back to you, Femi, I listened to your episode of the Inbetweeners podcast with Najat. It was fucking awesome. Yeah, that was so good, dude. You have a really cool thing going on.
Really? Oh my god.
I loved it. Because I've worked with Najat for a couple of years now, and I learned so much about her. And it was just like, wow, like this person I've been next to for so long, I knew nothing about.
You know, isn't it crazy the stories we all have to tell? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And shout out your book a little bit too. Tell us the name, tell us where to find it.
Oh yeah, the name might be hard for people. So the name is Jisoke, which is JISOKEE, Jisoke the Awakening. It's basically kind of like a memoir that I wrote with a friend who's in Canada. And the book has two purposes. The first one is to show a more realistic image of what it is to live in Western countries. And by that, I don't mean to like show negative parts, but to really show things the way they are and and balance the ideas that people have. And then the second one is to help other people who go through the same experiences by letting them know that they're not alone and other people go through it too. And so in the book, we came back on our, we talked about our first year of experience in these countries. And while we had like some similar topics, such as, you know, culture shock, self-identity, and even racism, we also had things that are very specific to what we're going through. Like she talked about love life. I didn't talk about that. And funnily enough, I had people asking me why I didn't talk about my love life, because apparently it's normal for someone like a 19-year-old. And I was like, because there was nothing to say about it. Like, do I have to talk about that? Anywho, we talked about just going through the process of living a new reality and discovering who we were as women, as Black, as young, as students, all of that. You know, we talked about finding a job for the first time, because that was a big thing for me, since like with what Kamga said, as a student, you don't really even have the opportunity to work back home. So here, finding that balance between the work responsibilities and school and home and all of that, it was a big thing. So the book, it was really about our own journey and just us acknowledging and analyzing the things we went through and how they changed us and how they molded us into becoming who we were. And yeah. So where can it be found? It can be found on Amazon. Typically, you can just type my name, Femi Nasi, and you'd find it. It can also be found on my website, which is also feminasi.com. But yeah, that is about it.
And Kamga, is there anything you want to shout out before we wrap up?
My YouTube channel. You can go on ahead and find me there. I think with everything I'm doing, I don't know if you probably cannot see this. I mean, obviously, if you're listening, you cannot see this, but there's like a board here with my plans for the next couple of months, and my YouTube channel is at the centerpiece of nearly everything, whether it's with my podcast or Medium and everything else. I'm really doubling down on visual storytelling and learning from other people to enjoy that. So that's where a lot of my energy is going. So yeah, if you could go there and subscribe to the channel, watch a video, give me a hate comment. I like hate comments. It helps me grow.
I was going to make a joke that you love hate comments. And I was like, no, Danny, you shouldn't make that.
Maybe that's a skill you can leverage.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I didn't know I enjoyed it, but I do a lot more now. It's not even healthy. So, but
yeah, it's not healthy. It is so not healthy. That is scary. You need to talk about it to your therapist.
We'll do an intervention after this.
No one knows what it means, but it gets the people going.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining. Appreciate you. So much love to you. And is there anything else before we wrap up?
Yeah, I would like to just say one thing. It's a lot of what we've talked about so far has been, you know, very individual and very personal experiences. And for me, one thing that I would really like to clarify before we close is that I've been able to even deal with these things a lot better than most people because of my wife, Queenie. Like, there's so many instances and so many things that I've had to go through. Even the journey back. Come on, shut up. What I'm doing right now.
Queenie, we love you.
Yeah, we love you, Queenie.
Yeah. So a lot of that confidence comes in a lot apart from her and her ability to see me what I don't even see myself and encourage me and motivate me. And it's been a very difficult, challenging time. And I don't think I would have survived without her. So yeah, I just wanted to say that.
Mm. Nice. Okay. So I guess I need to give a shout out to someone too. Yeah. So this person has been there like the whole time through thick and through thin. Thank you, Femi.
I knew you were amazing.
I didn't pull a Snoop Dogg.
You're amazing. I love you so much. Without you, oh my God, I'd be dead by now. So, yeah. But yes, thank you, Danny, because this was amazing. And, you know, I always enjoy talking about, like, some experiences and things like that because it also allows me to reflect on the things I've been through and to just discover some other aspect that I wasn't even aware of. So, thank you for having me. Thanks, Kamga, for being the partner in crime. And thanks to everybody who listened. And yeah.
Yeah, make sure to like and subscribe and share the Soul Stories podcast.
All right.
Exactly.
Thank you for taking time out of your day to listen to the Soul Stories podcast. These conversations are absolutely one of my favorite parts of working within Soul Stories. I hope you leave feeling inspired and energized. If you like what you heard, please leave a rating and or a review wherever you get podcasts. It really helps amplify the show and, most importantly, the voices of our guests. Thanks and see you next time. This is Danny signing off.